Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today's guest on With Respect is Kieran Conway. Kieran has been a guest in our show on two occasions before this. We were talking about his life history and how he came to the United States from Kilkenny, Ireland, and settled here in Michigan. And we talked about all the fascinating things that he had done. We're going to reprise those in a minute, but we're going to be talking about a special part of his life that affects many, many people in our area and around the world, and that is cancer. Kieran Conway, With Respect. Kieran, how are you today?
I'm great.
Oh, no, stop it. I knew you were going to do that.
You're doing real good.
No, I'm doing great, John. Thank you very much. And it's good to be back. Good to be back.
I'm sure it is good to be back.
Oh, yeah. I'm living the dream. I always say that.
When you were last here, we were talking about your life as a rugby player, coming from Kilkenny, Ireland. Mm-hmm. Your grandfather had a pub. And you lived there and grew up, and then you went off and became a rugby player for pity's sake.
Well, we went off. We left Ireland, and then we went to Africa for 8 years, because at that time, you know, back in Ireland in those days, there was not much for the young like there is today. I mean, the world has opened up. We can sit at home and earn a living. Back in those days, you couldn't, you know. We can make a living touching glass, iPads, and computers, and you don't even have to go to work. There's Zoom meetings now and all
that. That's right.
So it's opened up a whole world and jobs. But back in those days, there wasn't for young people. And my mother at that time wanted us to, you know, we should get out of Ireland, and she wanted my father out, and luckily he had a great engineering job, and he ended up getting a job in West Africa building the Volta Dam, which is the equivalent of like the Hoover Dam in Las Vegas, and it was with that idea to bring water to the African villages. So we were out there for 8 years, and we were little Irish missionary nuns teaching us in the jungle, and because we were on the equator, we ran around on beaches every afternoon, and when we finally came back to Ireland, my brother and I were very athletic. You know, when you spend like that, and the poor little Irish kids sitting shivering in the rain for the last 8 years. So when it came to the rugby field, we were quite, you know, we loved it. For us, we were naturals at it. We're just running around, fighting over a ball in the mud, but through that, my brother and I, we ended up playing for one of the top, and still the top team in the world, one of the top teams in the world, Gloucester Rugby Club in England. And it was a dream for us to do that, and we both did it, and we won what was like the Super Bowl of rugby, and we toured Canada, I've been on several rugby tours to France and Europe. And from there on, you know, I was a school teacher in England, and then decided, for some reason, I don't know why I decided this, but I wanted to sing for a living. And I remember when I handed in my notice at this school, a really good school I was teaching at, they said, "Well, what are you going to do?" I said, and I went, "Well, I'm going to sing." And they said, "Sing? When did you ever start singing?" "I don't know, but I want to." And they said, "What are you going to sing?" Because it was a big Irish school, I thought I'd impress the headmaster and go, "Well, I'll sing Irish songs." And he said, "Irish songs?" who the hell wants to listen to Irish songs? That's what he said. And you know what they, he said, because he obviously knew I was never going to make it singing or playing the guitar. He said, can you play the guitar? And I said, no. He said, well, how are you going to do that? I said, I don't know, but that's what I want to do. And so they held my job open with a substitute teacher for 3 months. And they said, if you don't come back in 3 months, then we'll give the job away. But he was that confident, I'll be back there next week. But that's what I did. And I went on, traveled half the world with performing in Europe, and even my name in headlights at the Mirage in Las Vegas. Ah. 30 years I performed.
30 years?
30 years. And this is where the cancer comes in. Right after the Las Vegas thing, I was diagnosed with the esophageal cancer, which was a huge surgery, and they took a tumor out of my stomach and took my stomach out. And so I was on a feeding tube lying in bed for 9 months, lost 85 pounds in weight. I was a skeleton, mm-hmm. and I wasn't going to make it either. Mm-hmm. I knew I was going. And then some friends gave me a book, and it was a big binder book, and I was so weak I couldn't hold it up. But on page 4, I just read one line. It said, your blood is more healing power than any drug you'll ever take.
Hmm.
And I remember that line, and I just let the book flop down. I was too tired to even hold it. And that kept buzzing around in my head, that thought, your blood is more healing. What if I could get out of bed and, you know, maybe just walk across the room here and just spin my blood? And that was the seed. And then one day I was able to get down the stairs with help, walk maybe 50 yards and collapse on the street. Had to be carried home. But then I decided, I've got to do this every day. Next day it was 75 yards, collapse, carried home. Next day it was, you know, one thing, long story short, went half a mile. Then I got a backpack on, 2 miles, 5 miles, 15 miles a day. And I became like this Marine, marching every day. And that brought me back. And I couldn't talk either, because they cut the esophagus in my throat.
Mm-hmm.
So I would talk like this, you know, constantly. People say, Kieran, how are you? I'm doing good. Like just now when you said, now I could do.
I'm doing great.
You know, but it took a lot of practice to talk again. And so it took away my profession as an entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
But as the years went on, I got a few jobs just to see, you know, make some kind of a living again. And having to talk to people constantly brought my voice back stronger. And then I've only performed twice in 12 years since they took my stomach out. And then eventually I thought, well, I just don't want to be working for a corporate company because they don't really care, you know. And I bought this place here in Three Oaks and turned it into Conway's, which was a really cute little coffee shop / restaurant lunch place. And that brought me back again to talking with people and having fun with people,
mm-hmm.
you know. And a friend of mine came down to sing with me one day. He said, can I come and sing at your place? And Bernie Glimm, he's quite very well known in the Chicagoland area, and he was out there performing, and I was making sandwiches and coffee and everything inside, and he was on the stage outside performing with his wife, and he happened to be mentioning to people, you know, Kieran, by the way, was quite a performer before cancer got him, and as I was coming through with sandwiches, some guy went, who? The busboy? And I heard that. They went, what? I'm the busboy. I used to be somebody.
I used to be a contender.
Yeah, could have been. Could have, should have, would have. And Bernie said, why don't you go get your guitar? And I went back in the kitchen because I know I had to get some other stuff out there. And I went, you know what? I should go grab that guitar upstairs, come down the stairs. And I said, I'm going to do it, you know.
Yeah.
And I got on the stage with him, and it took me about 20 minutes to tune the guitar. And so it even looked worse because it was ding, ding. And we started singing it, and it just naturally came out of me. And we had a blast. And it was very emotional then. At the end of it, I mm-hmm. just welled up with tears because I couldn't believe that came out of me like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then... But I've never done it again. But I want to do it for, you know, like if a hospital had an event, I could go on with my guitar and talk like this, maybe sing a few songs and just to lighten it up, because cancer is a depressing subject to talk about, and it's a frightening subject to some people. And with the hospitals, when they have their big conventions, it's a lot of professors on stage showing graphs here, videos of this and what we're doing, and it's all. But if you're in the audience after an hour of that, it gets like, you know, you're, are we here getting a university degree out of this? But they would like somebody like me maybe to come on and just say, you know, here's the what it looks like when you're on the other side of what they're going to do to you. You're the
recipient.
Yeah, Dr. Lau up at the University of Michigan, he's just amazing. He's the head guy with melanoma, and they're number one in the country for melanoma. So I couldn't have been in a better place. But when he said, would you like to come in for a second opinion? Because it wasn't working in Chicago for me. They actually told me, sorry, there's nothing we can do for you.
Let me ask you this. You went through esophageal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had another round with melanoma cancer.
Yeah.
Melanoma is cancer of the skin. Esophageal is the vocal cords and the
leads right down into your stomach.
Down into your stomach.
Yeah,
and in each of those cases, you were not diagnosed as someone who is going to survive.
Mm. Yeah. The surgery that the Ivor Lewis surgery they gave me, they stopped doing years ago because nobody survived it, and they brought it back just at the time I had esophageal cancer, and where my tumor was growing was at the end of my esophagus, just inside my stomach. So they had to take my stomach and my esophagus. And what it was, this surgery, they open up your body right from a scar, right from your neck down to your waistline, then cut you down the back and open you up at the side. And then they take every organ out of your body, every organ except your heart. And the reason they have to cut you down the back because of your rib cage, when they mm-hmm. basically they replumb you and redirect you, so your intestines now are your new stomach.
Hmm.
And I said to them, and I was 9 months lying in bed on a drip feeding tube, so I was not eating any solids or anything. But I said to them, how does it work then that your intestines become your new stomach? What happened to all the enzymes and acids that break down your food like normal? And they said to me, oh, yeah, like no problem. Your intestines will learn to do that. I said, and I look at them going, right. No wonder they gave me a year left to live. That ain't ever, it's never going to get to that stage. But it was. It took about 3 years for it to work, where I could now eat practically anything. But I can only eat in like a cereal bowl size. And if I go over that, I'll know it. If I go 3 bites over, I go into this like coma where I'm just literally dropping. So I have to say, if I eat this, I know what's going to happen. So back off, you know. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that was a hard thing to do, you know, when you're a rugby player and you're drinking. Well, yeah,
right there. That's something that's fascinated me, and like anybody else, scared me about these terminal diagnoses of whatever it is happens to be. I was active as a young guy in sports, baseball, football, basketball. Mm. And I remember how much joy I got out of playing sports and how running and swimming. Mm. And every so often I would have an injury And it looked like it was that's the end. I'm no more. My knees went, and so I couldn't run anymore. But I thought, I've been deprived of that which I enjoy so much, is so much a part of my life. Mm. Whether I survive, my life is gone. Now, we're going to stop on that thought because you and I are going to talk about what happens when you're given a diagnosis that's it, you're done, a period of time. And or you're now lost 85 pounds and you know that you can't play rugby anymore. So what effect does that have on you psychologically? We'll talk about that in just a minute. Right now we're going to take a break. We're talking to Kieran Conway, who is come to us in Michigan from Kilkenny, Ireland, indirectly through London, Gloucester, Dublin, and on
Chicago,
Chicago and everything. He's finally settled here. We're talking about something that is scary to so many people, but it's important to hear from a person who survived just how the process got going and how he's with us here today. This is John Smetanka on With Respect, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Kieran Conway. Kieran is a singer. He was a rugby player. He is an entertainer. He is a cancer survivor. We're going to be talking about that specifically as we go along. We're talking about the effect of cancer diagnosis on you psychologically and physically, what it took him to recover. It's going to be obviously a long process that he went through. Anyway, this is John Smetanka. So, Kieran, when we broke, I teased you with this. You find out that you can't do those things which you so identified with. You lost your voice, and you were an entertainer. You lost your physical bulk, your muscles, whatever. So you can't do those things with, like in rugby or whatever else that you were involved in. What does that do to you psychologically?
Well, the rugby was long gone because I was performing for nearly 30 years, you know. So, but I always kept really fit. In fact, just a week before I went in for surgery, I ran 15 miles. I was always keeping fit. And that was part of my big survival for that surgery, because they say a lot of the times when we have to bring people in for a surgery like that, they're not in any shape. Their heart will never take it. So, but because I was so fit, they went straight to surgery, and that was probably a big part of the success of getting through it. And but it was, I remember my website saying that I will be back in 6 months, and I never went back to my website, because after 6 months I realized I don't even have a voice. I was talking like this, and it slowly started sinking into me, and I watched myself just disappear away in bed. I was just becoming a skeleton. I suddenly realized I'm not going to make it. And my brother would come in, and he'd sit at the end of the bed, and I started getting, then the depression came in. I wasn't hugely depressed, but just very sad, and just didn't know what to do. And here's the other thing. I had, at that point, let me see what I had. I had a home in New Buffalo, and I had a house in Florida. And you had two mortgages, and you suddenly think, I've no way of earning. The only time I earned money was when I walked on stage. And I had, you know, I was living the American dream. I had nice car, boat in New Buffalo, and couldn't have been living a better life. And then, you know, performing in Las Vegas, and that was going to be even better because they were asking, would I consider putting a show together in Las Vegas? And all of a sudden, the rug is pulled away from under your feet and you lie there going, how am I going to pay my bills and how am I going to do this? And I was very fortunate. I had a great following in Chicago and they put a benefit to for me, which afforded me to pay my bills for, I would say, just over a year. Just probably over a year. And then it's now what? Mm-hmm. But I, you know, and then I sold the house in Florida, so that afforded me a little more to pay my bills. And it seemed like I was just going, now what? And then when Apple exploded, I was very lucky to have interviewed for Apple, and there was 110,000 applicants for 11 positions in Chicago. And I was lucky to get one because mm-hmm. I was always into techie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And plus entertaining on stage for 30 years, I knew how to talk to people and make them think I was clever. In fact, I was at the Genius Bar one day and these people came in and they said, so you're from Ireland, are you? And they said, what makes you a genius? And I said, well, now, why would you think I'm a genius? Well, you're working up here at the Genius Bar. And I said, well, I'm only filling in here, but... To be honest, they spelt it wrong. I said, it's Guinness. This is the Guinness Bar. And so I got away with stuff like that. But It just made them relax because people were mad. They got pissed at you and stuff like that because, what do you mean I've lost all my stuff? I said, you have not lost your stuff. It's in the cloud. Well, what the hell is a cloud? You know, so it was all panicking. Everybody was panicking at that stage. But I did that for 2 years, and then I was approached by a great franchise restaurant that I loved. Would I be their general manager? And I turned that down. I said, no, I know nothing about food. And they say, you don't need to. You're the general manager. You just got to run the whole thing. I turned it down 3 times, and then I thought to myself, you know what? There's kids going to university for business management. And this has been offered to me on the plate. Why not go for it and just see where it can lead you to? But I did that. It was, I mean, it's day and night, you know. And you're only dealing, same thing, you're dealing with complaints.
Mm-hmm.
We come here all the time. My pizza is just a little burnt at the edge. What are you going to do about it? You know, good grief. I'll eat it. So I decided, that's it. I'm not working for it. I'm going to go back and try now and work for myself. So that's how this building came up here in Three Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I always used to come to Three Oaks years ago when I lived in New Buffalo all these years. And I always used to say, there's nothing open here. And when I got that building, I said, now I've got to do something with this building, not for myself, but for everybody else. And I figured there's a lot of people coming up here with big money. And we got some expensive art shops in town and antique stores as well. But they all have to eat, too. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how much money you've got, they want to eat. And then I thought, well, I'm not just going to open up what you see in every town. Or I'm going to do the Irish traditional stuff, Irish scones, warm out of the oven with butter and jam. And, you know, I did, in fact, you had the Guinness stew. You know, I did that. And, then, You know, it was really, it was meant to be a coffee shop, but it wasn't in the end. It was a restaurant and it wore me down. And what happened then with cancer, I was working day and night on that.
Mm-hmm.
When I work like that, my immune system goes down, cancer comes in. What they found out now, they're with cancer patients, they do genetic testing. And me and my sister, we both have a gene in us that causes cancer.
Mm.
And all my other siblings don't have it. My family, history family, no cancer, just me and my sister. And we had that gene.
Mm-hmm.
And so when our immune system goes down, bing, wakes up all the cancer cells. But unfortunately for me, when I had Conway's, I was open 4 years and it was doing really nicely, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't making any money, but it was paying the bills,
mm-hmm.
which is quite an achievement
mm-hmm.
When you open a new business like that. But from my previous surgeries where there was drainage pipes coming out of my ribs, it kind of had, you know, scar tissue. Mm-hmm. And that developed into a mole. But because it was round the back of my ribs towards my back, you know, you don't check here. They say, well, when did you notice this? And I said, I never did. Mm-hmm. You know, but it grew into a mole. But instead of growing out, it grew in, and it was the size of a baseball.
Oh.
And the only reason I knew, one day I was cycling and I came back and I took my T-shirt off and there was blood on my T-shirt. And I went, wow, where's that from? And this mole had actually popped a little, and I had to go get it. Actually, what's really weird is I didn't know if it was a mole. I walked into I was in Meyer up in Stevensville, and I thought, well, I'll go up to the pharmacy and say, do you have a cream for a mole or a wart? And this girl at the pharmacy said to me, well, it's two different things. If it's a wart, we can give you a cream and it burns off. If it's a mole, you got to see a doctor and they'll have to lance it off or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, if it's in a place I can see, I'll show it to you. And there was a few people in line with me, and I just, okay, I lifted up my shirt and I showed her the back of my ribs, and her neck jerked back like she was in a car crash. And her eyes welled up in tears, and she just pointed right in my face, said, you have to go and see a doctor now. You have to see a doctor now, she said. You must go today. And I looked at her in shock, and she was shaking a little and mm-hmm. in tears. And I walked out. I remember walking out and said, it's back. Cancer's got me again. And here I am with Conway's, you know, getting last-minute groceries before we opened up. And I said, this is it. So I go to the doctor, and a local doctor, and he took a little specimen and sent it off to Mayo, and it came back. He called me and he said, I'm sorry to tell you, it's cancer, it's full blown. But unfortunately, it got through in through my lymph nodes. Now, when it goes in through your lymph nodes, it's now in your bloodstream. So those little millions of cancer cells are swimming around your body, and your organs are like the coral reef in Australia. You know, they build nests, fish build their little nests all.
Mm-hmm.
And these cancer cells, it takes millions, but once they start sticking and grouping together is what builds the tumor. And it will take millions before it shows up, even on a PET scan. A little freckle has to have millions before it'll ever show up.
Mm.
And so when I showed you some of the tumors that were in me on the photograph on my phone, that grew in 6 months. I had to shut down. I had to be rushed into Chicago for surgery to get that out, but it wasn't successful surgery. They had to call me back in and open me up again and go again. And since then, I've had 13 surgeries on that same area because I don't know what happened. It must have exploded in me or something. And at that point, though, Chicago couldn't do any more for me. They said, we don't, you know, and the head surgeon down there looked at me. He said, look, I'm going to tell you something. This is your year, he said. Whatever you've ever wanted to do, this is your year. And I said, okay, yeah. And he grabbed me by the shoulders and pulled me around again and looked at me. He said, I'm telling you, this is your year. And I knew what he was saying, like, anything you've ever wanted to do in your life, this is it, because that's it for you. So I had to shut down Conway's, which it kills me to see that close. But, you know, I had 13 surgeries since then, and doing really well. They put me on immune drugs, and I was doing really well. And I went in for a PET scan just last October. Last October I was fine, you know, looking good and
mm-hmm.
No cancer showing. And then I had another PET scan in April, just last April, a year ago. And 2 days later, Dr. Lau called me. And before, when I had the PET scan, he said, look, I might not see you this next meeting because I'm going to visit family. And so I'll let you know how the PET scan goes. 2 days later, I get a call from the nurse saying, Dr. Lau wants to speak to you. And he wants to speak to you by Zoom. And this was just a year ago. And he showed me my PET scan on the Zoom. And it was shocking.
And now we're going to take a break before we go on to the next stage here. Mm-hmm. This is John Smetaker on With Respect. We're talking to Kieran Conway, who is a survivor of cancer, but someone who has gone through this process for lo these many years and 13 surgeries and several people telling him it's all over. And we're going to be talking to him more about how things have changed so radically in the last months for him. This is John Smetanka, as I said, on With Respect, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Kieran Conway. Many people who listen here will remember his cafe restaurant in Three Oaks called Conway's, serving great Guinness stew. Oh, it was good. And it brought out of you the crack. We're going to talk over the crack. We're going to be talking about the crack in a minute. This is John Smetanka, and we are now going to talk about this discovery again that this is not going well, and you've got cancer again. Mm. It's broken out for the third time now. Mm-hmm. What happened?
Well, third time with an expiry date on it too.
Yeah.
You know. Well, what happened after my PET scan a year ago, last April? Two, three days later, Dr. Lau came on, and I could see in his face that he's going to have to tell me something that he probably doesn't want to ever tell any of his patients.
But, now, who is this Dr. Lau?
He's a head guy up there at melanoma at the University of Michigan. He's a genius. He's a young guy. He's in his 50s. And he's big into research on cancer and melanoma, and not only that, but the immune drugs that have come out and have been tested, and they're now in America. But the thing is, he knows exactly the amount of how to administer it. A lot of places would just hear, this is what we're going to pump into you, but he's able to. They weigh you. They go through all your blood. You have to have your blood drawn, and they go through everything about your body, your blood, your if it's just right, and then they weigh you. And then while you're waiting to go in for your infusion, they make up the bag of the immune drugs in a drip that they inject into you.
How did you get to know him?
Well, what it was. The doctor that after the talking about the girl with the pharmacy, I went back 6 months later to see her and tell her she saved my life, because I had to go to the doctor from her reaction. And when I got there, I asked for her, and they said, oh well, no, she's moved to a different Myers, but we know who you are. And I said, well, if you see her, can you tell her she saved my life? And she said, well, we will definitely tell her that. And I said, because I had stage 4 melanoma cancer with a huge tumor growing in me, and they gave me a year left to live. And because of her, I went to the doctor. I probably wouldn't have. If I had not gone into Myers that day and saw her reaction, I'd have probably thought, I'll get a Band-Aid and carry on for a while, you know, because it was busy at the restaurant. And they said, well, why she was so shook up and emotional, it was her first day back in 6 months, because her 30-year-old sister died of melanoma. Oh. So when she saw that that mole on you, she knew exactly what it was. And that was her first day back. So she was very upset because it brought back all the memories of her sister. So with that, then, I went back to the doctor that took the specimen to send off to Mayo. And I said, I'm looking for a general doctor that will know a bit about cancer rather than just a doctor that deals with customers coming in with flu and, you know, and stuff. And he said to me, look, you're out of my league here. I'm not able to help you with this. This is, you need to be at a university hospital or something like that where they really deal with this kind of cancer and illnesses. And he said, do you mind though, all I can do is pray for you. Would you mind if I prayed? And I sat there in the room sitting on the table expecting to be examined and, you know, and he put his hand on my shoulder and started praying. And I thanked him, you know, and I walked out and I thought to myself driving home, this is not a good feeling, you know, when you go in to see a doctor to help you. And he says, all I can do is pray. I felt like that country song, Jesus, take the wheel. But anyway, so in calling around, my caregiver, we were looking for a local doctor of some sort, but somehow University of Michigan phone came up on the Google, and we called, and they said, well, we're in Ann Arbor. And I went, where's Ann Arbor? You know, I wasn't quite sure. And but she stayed on the phone for 40 minutes, and she said, would you like to come in for a second opinion? Because University of Chicago said, there's nothing more we can do for you. And so we went up there, and Dr. Lau walked in, and he sat down to just talk to me, and he spent 2 hours talking to me, and it wasn't so much about cancer for the 2 hours. He spoke, like we are here today, talking about my life, what I've done, what I achieved to do, what am I doing now, how did I handle the other cancers and blah, blah. And what he was collecting was information that I gathered. He said at the end of the 2 hours, he said, I think we can help you. He said, I think we can put you on a 5-year program. I went, how long? 5 years? Chicago's giving me months. No, he said, well, we all do it differently here. And he's huge into research and everything, and a genius, I have to tell you. And his team too, the wonderful nurses. And they treat you like you're the only person walking into that hospital. They really do. They know you by your first name. Some of the nurses, oh, Kieran, how are you? You know, that it's just, and that's a wonderful feeling. And but what he was gathering that day, that 2 hours, was how was I going to, can he see any fight in me? Because, you know, I've sat in waiting rooms, and I make a joke of it because I walk a lot, but I always walk past people and go, hey, Kieran, how you doing? Yeah, great. Dead man walking, you know. And I walk off past. And, but he was gathering the information. Do I have the fight in me? Because if he puts me what he's going to put me through, you can't come in. I see other patients going up to the desk to check in, and they walk in like they've given up, you know. And I walk in think, you know, this is, you know, how long am I going to be here today? Because I want to do stuff. There's river rafting outside the hospital, beautiful river. I want to do that. Hang on a minute. You're dying, buddy. And but, yeah, so he gathered that. And not only that, though, I've been with him now 3 years. He saved me on the tumor that grew in there, in my side here. But then with the news of all the tumors in my lungs there last April, and it was just huge that my lungs are full of tumors. And he said, too many, too big to do surgery. So I said, well, what's the scenario here? And he said, if we do nothing, you've got about 6 months. If we can get you into the hospital tonight, we're going to hit you hard with these immune drugs, immune therapy, and but it'll come with some risks and side effects and stuff like that. And but we can't tell you to do this. You have to make that decision. Because, you know, if it goes wrong, we can't say, hey, you know, you told me this, I'd be running in the Olympics this summer if I did this. Mm-hmm. But no, and I said, well, what are the side effects? He said, death. That's the first one. I said, now when I die, what's the second one I'm going to have? And, you know, strokes, blood clots, heart attacks. It causes, believe it or not, skin cancer. And I had to go in, melanoma, for another surgery. Again, on my nose here, they took off part of my left nostril. Mm-hmm. Had to build it up with plastic surgery, melanoma. And these drugs are doing that. Then a little bleeding in the brain, and all sorts of things. Sweats, like you wouldn't believe, while you're shivering and you're sweating. It's like I could only imagine it to somebody that was a meth addict and had to go through rehab, and they go into this, their body goes into shock. So I've had about every side effect other than death, and stroke. I haven't had a stroke, and or a heart attack. But there's,
those are three big ones.
Yeah,
there.
Those are, and I've skipped those. But you, I had the other ones was the stage 4 lung cancer, mm-hmm. and but I could see in that meeting he was. Because we get on really well. I mean, we've laughed and we've cried through it all.
As my brother says, he wants to always have a good tan and look good, because he wants, when he, if he has to go to the doctor, yeah. he wants to be appeared to be worth saving.
Yeah, and if you're a melanoma patient, you don't want to walk in with a tan.
No,
you don't. Because they're going to say, you're not following the rules here. Yeah, he's great. We've had a lot of laughs, but at the end of that meeting where he said, okay, we'll see you in the morning because we're going to bring you in, I said, you know what? You remind me of a patient going in to see the doctor, and the doctor says, look, I've got some good and bad news for you. And the patient says, well, I've had a really bad day, so give me the good news. He said, well, you've got 24 hours left to live. And the patient says, that's the good news? Good grief, what's the bad news? He said, I should have told you yesterday. So I told that to Dr. Lau. He's on the Zoom meeting after he just told me all the tumors in my lungs and I've got 6 months. He looks at me like deer in the headlights for a minute, and we both burst out laughing. And that's how it is, you know.
Yeah.
It was, and it's great that we can have lighten it up. Because it's very serious.
It is very serious. But, you know, I want to say that one of the things I've noticed in the past 2 years in America is that we have lost the ability to laugh at ourselves and laugh with others. Mm. Among serious problems, COVID, serious, many other problems that we've had, political problems, social problems. Mm. But the problem that I see too much of is the inability to have perspective and to laugh, to laugh at ourselves. Mm. Somebody once said, America needs a month at the beach. Kind of just not getting cancer, okay, but a month at the beach. So we get some relaxation and just calm down.
Yeah. If I had to write a book on cancer, now Dr. Lau did mention to me that he was thinking of writing a book. But if I had to write a book, I know from my inner experience, you know, when I was through my career being in very nerve-wracking situations, like the first time you run out on a field in front of thousands of people on a very brutal game, knowing you're going to get seriously hurt too, it was nerve-wracking. Walking on stage for the first time with a guitar in front of people was even more frightening. And just stuff like that. So, but then when I worked so hard, when I was, and didn't realize my immune system was going down, because I didn't realize until Dr. Lau found out about it that I have this gene that brings on the cancer. It was I just realized, you know, I've got to go with their brilliance of studying it constantly. I never did. But when my immune system goes down, cancer comes in, and they found out that gene. And so now with these immune drugs, what it does actually is not only fight the cancer, but it also builds up your immune therapy. It's the immune therapy builds up your immune system. So your body now will learn how to fight cancer if it ever comes back. So it's a bit like how, you know, people get a flu shot and they always say you can get some symptoms of the flu. That's because your body now knows how, okay, if you get the flu, we'll attack it. But that's what the idea of these immune therapy. Do you know who was one of the first? President Carter. He had melanoma, stage four melanoma, and he was one of the first few to go on immune therapy. And look at him today. He's in his, what?
90s.
Late 90s and still building homes for Habitat. You know, he's amazing. So he's kind of inspires me too.
We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what he's found out through his immune therapy about himself, physically and psychologically. This is John Smetanka on With Respect, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Kieran Conway, who is an entertainer, a former rugby player, a teacher, and a restaurateur, and now a cancer survivor. This is John Smetanka. So, Kieran, you got this these PET scans, which said that your lungs and your body was full of cancer. You went through immune therapy. What happened?
Well, the way I, in layman's terms, Dr. Lau would be able to explain it all much better than I can. But when I had chemo years ago, when they first, that nearly killed me. Not the surgeries or anything, the chemo nearly killed me. I lost, because chemo is designed to not only kill the cancer, but kills all your good stuff too. Your hair falls out, your nails. Lost so much weight, and they ended. They had to stop the chemo. They said, "There's nothing else we can do for you." So, but these immune drugs are like missiles. So these tumors in my lungs, instead of flooding your body with, like chemo does, they're designed to just like send missiles right into your lungs, like military, like sending these missiles from aircraft in through windows. And so it attacks just the tumors in the lungs, plus building up your immune system as they do it. And I just had my PET scan a month ago. All those tumors are gone. And they just gave me a PET scan just last 2 weeks ago to see for sure, has it really gone? Any signs of nothing? Absolutely nothing. And so I was back in hospital with Dr. Lau last Friday, and he came in and he just sat down in front of me and he said, "This is nothing short of miraculous." And he showed me on the screen again my lungs. Nothing there. There's no cancer in me. And yet a year ago I was just barely able to walk upstairs and sucking for air like this because there's all these tumors in me. And you know, after that Zoom meeting, he told me about that last year. My sister just died of cancer. She's the other one that only two of us had the gene. And I got up from the table as the Zoom meeting ended and I just said, right, put on my shoes, I'm off for a walk and walk 10 miles. I walk 10, 12, 15 miles a day. And the way I think of it, because I still remember back to that, your blood is more healing power than any drug you'll ever take. So I spin my blood every day. And I know it's excessive walking, but I treat cancer now like a little dog. I say, come on, boy, we're going. Oh, God, really? Where are we going? Oh, why can't you be like another patient and sleep on the couch and I can attack you? No, come on, counselor, let's go. How far are we going today? 5, 10, 15. I don't know. I'll decide. And sometimes I get really weak when I'm walking and I'll sit against a fence and have to take, my sugars drop and I take some gummy bears or something. And I know I'll pretend I'm looking down at a dog and I say, you want me to sit down, don't you, cancer? Come on, yeah. No, come on, let's go. And off I go. And I treat it that way. It's just my little stupid game, but I treat it that way. And I'm convinced that's a big... And Dr. Lau has agreed that that is a part of, fighting cancer. I never knew what fighting cancer meant. You know, when somebody says, oh, you got to fight it. And I said, well, fight what? There's nothing to see. I've got my gloves on. Who do I hit? Mm-hmm. But I realized all these years I was fighting cancer by walking. I wouldn't give into it. And, you know, that shocking news last year, stage 4 lung cancer now and 6 months left to live. I just said, come on, cancer, we're going. And I get this feeling now that I know it sounds cocky, but I'm not. You can never be cocky with cancer. It's like, cancer, if you want me, you better keep up with me. You know, mm-hmm. I kind of think that way now. And it doesn't worry me as much, even when they give me it may come again that they'll say, hey, you've got just 3 months left to live. But the one thing about cancer is you can prepare for your end, as opposed to if I was in a big car crash and mm-hmm. bang, it's all over, and nobody knows your passwords for your bank account or to close down this. You leave your loved ones and family in a mess going, oh, how do we shut this down? So I've got, you know, my wills and everything, and the Ladybird deed, which is a kind of a will that when I pass and hand over everything or to my family, my brother and his kids, they can't go after him and say, hey, by the way, he mm-hmm. owes X amount of dollars for medical bills. I think it was President Johnson that came up with that. So if you've had massive medical bills and died, the Ladybird will protect your assets. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's why I had to shut down Conway's, because they can take your business for your medical bills, but they have to leave you with your home and one vehicle. Mm-hmm. So I basically had to turn that place into my home. Mm-hmm. And they came and inspected it 3 times to make sure I wasn't running. It is my home, but here, he's still running.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very hard then, because I haven't earned a penny in 4 years.
Okay, so you are now cancer-free.
Yeah.
Verified by PET scans.
And Dr. Lau.
And Dr. Lau.
Amazing team, yeah.
All right. When you found out about this latest attack on your wound in your back.
Oh, that one, yeah.
You went to see a doctor, and the doctor, all he did was to put his hand on your shoulder and say, let's pray. Mm-hmm. He was basically saying, medicine is not going to help you.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. I never thought of that.
So you're now faced with medicine is not giving, you know, the diagnosis that you were given, that short, very simple and powerful statement is, it's it, okay. Death is not an option. That's Americans sometimes think that death is an option, but it isn't for anybody. Mm. So you found that you're walking and your sense of life, a wanting to live.
Mm. Yeah, hugely wanted to live.
And why? Why did you want to live? No, seriously, because some people give up.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, this is my third... that was my second cancer when I first met with Dr. Lau. Why did I want to live? Because, one, I'd bought this place here in Three Oaks and built it. It was a dream, really, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I was so kind of angry with cancer. Come on, give me a break. Every time I get to the peak of something I'm doing, you come in and take it all away from me, like Vegas in, mm-hmm. you know, performing. And, you know, I did a lot of, when I performed, when you first come to America, you perform in rat holes, biker bars where they're doing cocaine on the bar. I mean, all that. But then you gradually get seen and you move up, and then corporate companies want you to perform, and next thing, Vegas. And when I got to Vegas, then I got my first big cancer. And then I was doing really well, and then opened up Conway's, you know, and that was a lot of work, hard work, and bang, cancer gets me, because I was working day and night on that. And I don't know where the lung cancer came out of this past year, but I have no clue how that came about. But obviously, you see, it got in through my lymph nodes and is swimming around like fish and saying, oops, we're being attacked now.
Okay, so, you know, you've made jokes here. Mm. And you've made jokes to Dr. Lowe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure you've done, yeah. Because that's what one of the things that you do. Mm. You have a great style. You have a great patter. Your music folds into it, your Irish music, your performances. So if one were to talk to you or hear you talking, you might they might think, well, he's just making light of all this. Mm. I don't think you're making light of it.
No, not at all. They don't see you at home throwing up several times a day. They don't see you curled in a ball, sweating and shivering. They don't see you losing that kind of weight. They don't see the worries you've got going on, because you can't, how am I going to pay this bill? How am I going to get that bill paid? And then, yeah, a lot of people say, I can't do it, I'm going to give in. And they don't see that. But when I come out, I try not to depress people when they say, Kieran, how are you doing? Well, let me tell you what, you know, I always walk past and say, I'm living the dream. Sometimes I say, well, or dreaming to live, you know. But when I came out of the hospital there last week, when Dr. Lau said it's nothing short of miraculous, I walked out like Conor McGregor, you know, the MMA fighter, you know, yeah. How his swag, walked down the corridor like that, look at me. But no, I don't take it lightly at all. And I wanted to see who would inspire me. I remember always thinking about President Carter, because look at him, how he survived immune therapy. And I think it's just the way they treat you up at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. They really care. You're not a number going in there. They mm-hmm. And the nurses come up and they chat to you, and you talk about their lives too a little, you know, and you get to know them. And with Dr. Lau, poor guy, I mean, he doesn't know what to expect when he comes in. Sometimes I think the poor guy is, and he's had a hard day with other patients. But one day, sorry.
I was going to say, all that you talked about, all the things that you've gone through, the sweats and all the whatever that you've gone through, and the fear and the agony and the loss, obviously, life is still worthwhile to you.
Yeah, because, I don't know, I felt coming up here to Michigan, I was at this amazing peace and I loved it. I love this town, and I've lived up here almost as long as since I came to America, because I had a house in New Buffalo. Mm. And I just felt at peace, and I loved the little Conway's coffee shop theme of no Wi-Fi. You couldn't come in and sit down with a laptop. You know how you see at Starbucks and stuff. And people started talking, the whole place around.
They talked to each other.
Yeah, and they
That's right. That was one of the fascinating things about your restaurant, is that people, when they come in the door, they talk to each other.
Yeah, and they do.
And they do, and you develop that spirit so that people do want to talk to each other, which, frankly, is what I try to do with this program, is to get to people just to talk.
Yeah, yeah.
And have a conversation.
Right.
And then we come down to the last thing, and unfortunately we have to stop way too soon. But, again, humor. Mm. And the ability to laugh at yourself and laugh with others is a great healer. Mm. And it's also a great, you love life at that point.
Yeah, I do. I I don't feel my age, and I don't feel, even with cancer, the devastating stages of cancer I was given and no chance of really mm-hmm. surviving it. Now I look at it, it's if I'm told again, look, so sorry, you got 3 months ago, it might be my last time, but I'm not going to be, oh, because I've been down this road before, and don't panic, and, you know, and I try and lighten it up for myself. It's not to make, I'm not making fun of cancer in any way, but it's my way of getting rid of the nerves. I remember one day, 13 surgeries, but a huge lump after they mm-hmm. took it out came in like a ball of cement, and they had to do surgeries to get it out. But 6 months later, Dr. Lau walked in. I could hear him coming down the car doors eating a tangerine, and he walks in and I stuffed the tangerine up my shirt under my armpit, and he said, so how are you feeling? Everything going okay? Because I have to tell him any side effects I get.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I think I'm doing really good. But the only thing, you remember that big lump we did the surgery on to get that big lump out of me? I think it's coming back. He said, really? And normally he sits me up on the table, I have to take my shirt off and he can examine me. But this time he just ran his hand up outside my T-shirt and he felt this lump. And he went, whoa. And he jumped back. And as he jumped back, I opened my arms in the tangerine room and he jumped back and so I walked out of that meeting that day with him, and I don't know, he might have been saying a few things under his breath that he didn't want me to hear, but I walked out singing, hey Mr. Tangerine Man, please. And that's how we ended.
All right.
But you know,
And that, unfortunately, is how we're going to have to end it today.
Yeah, it was great.
Kieran Conway, thank you very much for joining us and giving us some humor, but also some serious thought about cancer and how it can be beaten.
Oh, without a doubt.
All right. The name of our program is With Respect. We're on every Sunday and Thursday. Until next time, remember our mantra. If you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.